Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Property Planner, Buyer and Professor podcast. It's lovely to have you with us again, and also lovely to have my two wonderful co-hosts, Kate Bakos and Dave Johnston. Kate, how are you doing?
Really well, thanks. It's great to be catching up with you two.
It's still Zoom, you know, COVID-19 is still a reality, but,
Is it ever? Everyone's holiday plans have been scattered and decimated. I was just telling you, Peter, I want to come to South Australia.
Yeah, well, we're supposed to be going to Noosa in 2 weeks. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Melbourne, maybe.
So very interesting times. Dave?
Yeah, as you know, we've managed to escape to Port Douglas and... thankfully, it hasn't got this far north, so we're managing to live without lockdown, and hopefully when we get back to Melbourne, we won't have to lock down at the other end, but we'll see how it pans out.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Otherwise, it's the world's most expensive podcast studio.
Yeah, that's right.
Very good. Very good. Okay, so the market is still crazy. Kate, what have you got to report?
Well, my market update is about a bit of crazy, and it's happening today. So we've got the clock ticking. We're up to 11 hours and 34 minutes until anyone purchasing residential property sub $1 million in Victoria can't get the concession that's on offer. So it's a bit of a race to the finish line. I've thrown a couple of offers out in the last day or two. We've got one that's just finalised, and I've got two boardroom auctions tonight. And that's everyone's effort to try and get their contract signed and the deal across the line to get the 25% discount off established property stamp duty or 50% off brand new property.
It's certainly very worthwhile to sign a contract today, right? 30th of June rather than tomorrow, which is the 1st of July.
Yeah, absolutely. I said to an agent who has an auction in 2 weeks' time, look, if we can do it today, I can offer you more. It's a bit of an incentive. But if you're talking about a first-time buyer who is having to contribute that additional, $11,000, $12,000, $13,000 out of their savings, that absolutely correlates to a much stronger borrowing capacity and an ability to put forward a stronger offer if the deal is facilitated today.
Certainly does. Yep. Dave, have you got anything to report from Port Douglas or around the nation?
No sport. No, we got away with that a couple of weeks in a row, didn't we, Pete? So we better stick clear of sport today. Yeah, so just the unemployment rate, it's a bit late in the month, but May results, Australia's unemployment dropped down to 5.1%. So it basically surprised all the pundits, reducing from 5.5 down to 5.1. We are one of only two nations in the world now who have more people employed than we did prior to COVID. Just over 1% more people in jobs than before COVID struck. So it's a pretty amazing story. The lowest unemployment's reached, for some more perspective, in the last decade is 4.9%. And so we're not far off that right now. Yeah, it's just another positive news story for the macro picture of Australia, which obviously flows down to property values and consumer confidence. Some interesting pieces of that is for all the hype around, obviously, Victoria's extended lockdowns, the unemployment rate in Victoria is under 5%. So it's 4.8%, whereas New South Wales might be surprising for many is at 5%. New South Wales gets a lot of positive media, and the way Gladys Berejiklian has overall managed COVID and not gone into lockdowns predominantly unless she absolutely has to, though she's copping a bit of stick for that at the moment. But New South Wales unemployment rate is higher than Victoria's. South Australia, Pete, I think you're aware of this, has the highest unemployment rate at 5.8%, Tassie at 5.7%. And ACT is the standout at No surprises there at 3.6% because it's got such a strong public service, which we're fortunate enough not to really be as impacted from a jobs perspective through COVID. The next lowest is Northern Territory at 4.5%. So, yeah, it's a really one of the major positive stories of how Australia has managed COVID, and it's reflected in our strong levels of employment. You know, now there's deeper discussions around underemployment and other areas, but overall we're tracking quite strongly in that area.
So, Dave, any reasons you think unemployment is so low, given that we have had COVID-19, serious lockdowns?
There's one really interesting factor which I tossed up sharing in this episode, but basically 200,000 or 300,000 jobs that are normally taken by foreign workers.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention. Yeah.
Are now being taken up by Australians. So arguably the story may not be quite as strong if we were allowing immigration, overseas immigration. So that's going to be an interesting story to tell. I mean, if you just add another 200,000 or 300,000 jobs to that, you take it away from the Australians, and you know, then unemployment still actually, in theory, could be as high as 7%. Now, it's unlikely to be that high, but that is, you know, they're sort of like previously non-existent jobs that are now being taken up by Australians. You're aware of that, Pete?
You know, I've been trying to find that, like, the definition of the unemployment, and it talks about labour force, but it doesn't talk about if it's Australian citizens or permanent residents or people on certain visas. But I'm sure that has some effect, because I would imagine if we haven't had foreigners, including international students, who would often take up jobs in cafes, restaurants, picking fruit, well, somebody's got to be doing that work. And so it would probably be Australian citizens. So, yeah.
Yeah, look, it's a bit of an anomaly to some degree, this 5.1%. And so it'll be interesting to watch how it plays out once we open up the borders again.
All right. Well, thank you very much for those two insightful pieces into our market. So today, as it is the 30th of June, we are talking about tax, in particular land tax. We may get onto stamp duty, which is really another form of tax, tax duty levy, same thing in the end, some sort of impost. But we are going to start talking about land tax, and it's very important because, number one, land tax is a state-based tax, unlike, say, capital gains tax, which affects everyone, doesn't matter which state or territory you're in. So as you acquire property, you need to be mindful of your ever-growing land tax bill, especially if you plan to buy multiple properties. Now, Dave, I can see that you've done lots of work here. How about you kick us off, and then I'll also ask Kate for her insight.
Yeah, sure, Pete. I think land tax is one of those taxes that most people don't fully understand, and often it's not factored into the cash flow cost when purchasing property. So it's something we thought it would be worthwhile unpacking once you start to own a certain number of properties, that probably at least two or three or above. You always want to be aware of the land tax implications as part of determining your next property purchase and location. Basically, every year, the valuer general evaluates, determines the unimproved value, i.e. the land value of a property, and land tax is an annual cost that is determined on the total value of the land you own in any given state. Now,
can I interrupt there, Dave? And just to open a Pandora's box, you've mentioned that it's land value is assessed, and I want to talk about how it's assessed, because we all know that there aren't enough valuers to go out there and value all of the many properties out there on the Australian landscape. So we rely on algorithms and what we call curbside valuations, and we know that they're not always right. We also know that, unlike applying for equity or watching your property grow, when our rates notice indicates that the valuation is higher than we want it to be, we get upset. We don't get excited.
It's a great...
We get upset. Yeah. So let's talk about that because we know that they're almost always conservative, and everyone's happy when they're conservative because they pay less tax.
But occasionally they're actually not conservative as well,
are they? We get upset.
And we get upset.
Yeah.
And this is a great tip, which you're leading us into here, Kate, is as soon as you get that estimate, like in Victoria, I think you only have, it might be 30 to 90 days to challenge it. So if you do have a land tax bill and it's ever growing, one thing you want to be checking off is looking at what are the estimates of the valuation of the land value of each of your properties and looking at if you want to challenge that and get moving on it earlier, because I think that's where you're taking us here, Kate, is that that can certainly save you thousands of dollars if for some reason the algorithm has overestimated the value of your land.
Yeah, same as for the rates notice, we get upset with our local councils when they get greedy and they hike up the rates. And it's just an input on a computer, so it can happen. And it did happen in Melbourne last year and the year before. Lots of complaints. And when you overlay market conditions, all you need is a falling market or a market that's got the wobbles, people will dig their heels in.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a great tip for our listeners to look at what the assessment has been, and then if you think it's potentially too high, make sure you reach out to the appropriate authority and let them know what you think and why, because you might be able to save a significant sum of money.
Sorry, I derailed you there.
That's fine. That's good. Let's because it is such a complex issue, land tax, and there's so many different directions we can go in this discussion. And there's so many variables. The value of your land in any given state is constantly changing. The tax the government charges you can change at any given time. And obviously, you know, Victoria have just changed their land tax legislation to start as of 2022. Now, that's Jan 1, 2022, because Victoria, which I always found a bit confusing just to deal with, because you're doing your tax returns, you know, end of financial year, but then your land tax is over the calendar year. They run it across the calendar year. Some jurisdictions run it over a financial year. Before you purchase your next property, you can't be certain on the cost of that or the amount that the land component will be valued at. So that's sort of an unknown before you make a property decision, but you want to factor in land tax. And you can't know for certain, you know, how many properties you're going to accumulate over your lifetime. So having a plan for developing and building your portfolio and considering, particularly if you're going to accumulate a large sum of properties and land value, and particularly if you start getting into commercial property as well, having a plan that factors in land tax and helps attempt to mitigate that expense, you know, is certainly worthwhile. And we'll unpack some of the reasons for that further today. Did you want to add anything to that, Kate or Pete?
Yeah, well, I'm going to throw a huge spanner in the works or a bomb, but I'm going to leave that right to the end. So everyone has to listen to right to the end.
Okay.
But one thing that I would like to point out is, and I know Kate's going to talk about why land tax is unfair, and I hope I'm not stepping on a toes here, but there's just one point I'd like to make with this great information that Dave and Anne-Marie have organised, which people should check out on the show notes. So, and I'm just using simple numbers. I'm not saying that everyone that listens to the show has $1 million or more in property, because I'm not using my calculator. It's just very simple numbers. So if you've got $1 million worth of land value in the ACT, your land tax is just over $10,000. And if you've got three times as much land, then your land tax is three times as much. Well, you know, that's fair. I understand that. But you go to New South Wales and your land tax for $1 million of land value is $4,000. If you've got $3 million worth of land, which is three times as much, your land tax bill is $36,000, nine times as much. It's even worse in South Australia. If you've got $1 million worth of land, the land tax bill is close enough to $5,000. You increase your land value three times to $3 million, you increase your land tax bill by 10 times. It's just, I don't know many other, I mean, I know our income tax is also scaled, our rates are scaled, but this is just phenomenal, especially for those people that own commercial property, because generally that's on a lot of, you know, large allotments of land, a lot of land value, just phenomenal. Sorry, that wasn't what you were going to say, was it, Kate, about being unfair?
No, I've got another couple of points that I think are grossly unfair.
Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about, on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
I mean, it is an unfair tax. It's a ridiculous tax, though. And it's a tax that you can claim a tax saving on as well. Like, it's the most ridiculous tax floating around. And it's got some really quirky anomalies too. But I'm happy to expand on the things that I think are grossly unfair.
Pete's jumped into the table that we've created. Anne-Marie's put together beautifully. And then I've highlighted some different areas of it, which we'll share in our show notes. But, yeah, if we set the scene a bit and then we'll get into some of those points. So firstly, there's a land tax-free threshold across the various jurisdictions. You know, Northern Territory, no land tax, which is certainly significant incentive to invest in some property in the Northern Territory. It also is a great highlighter for people how tax decisions drive investment choices. And that's what so much of the political and financial and economic discussion is about, and understanding how it's okay if you have a view to increase taxes, but it does change the level of investment in any given state, which then can impact, you know, obviously unemployment, the growth of the economy, the growth of salaries in that state. And so people making these connections, it's useful for you to try and understand and make these connections, because you know, no story is black and white. And obviously, Pete and Kate are going to talk about some reasons why they think land tax is unfair, but because all these decisions have different impacts, intended and unintended. So ACT, you pay tax from day one. Okay, so if you're just looking to accumulate a small portfolio, then ACT is the most expensive up until about $1 million worth of land. New South Wales is in fact the lowest or the best place to hold residential property up to land value of around $600,000. In fact, $755,000 is their land tax-free threshold. This is where, you know, although New South Wales ends up being expensive later on, if you're only going to have a small portfolio, it's very cheap. Tassie is also one of the most expensive, the land tax-free threshold. So when you start paying land tax, kicks in at once you own $25,000 worth of land. Queensland's $599, or essentially $600. South Australia's $450. Victoria's $250,000 and WA's $300,000, although Victoria's jumping to $300,000 next year. We've worked out some points at $600,000, $1 million, $2 million, and $3 million of land value. So remember, that's not the value of the total property. That's purely land excluding dwellings. At the $600,000 land value price point, which may mean that you have properties valued anywhere between maybe $700,000 to $1.5 million, the most expensive jurisdictions are the ACT and Tassie, and they're at $6,500 and $5,500, whereas all the rest of the states and territories are anywhere from $0 to $1,100. So there's a big difference. Tassie and ACT, by far the most expensive. At $1 million, again, they remain the most expensive. They've both clocked over $10,000 in land tax, and Tassie's are up at $11,000. And Victoria and WA are the only two under $3,000, $2,900 and $2,700. New South Wales and Queensland and South Australia are starting to get more expensive at that point in the $4,000 to $5,000 bracket. Now, because it's a tiered system in most states and territories, once we jump up to $2 million and to the point Peter was making before and then $3 million, South Australia becomes the most expensive. Now, how much of an impact does land tax have on property growth in any of the states? No one can definitively say. You know, but it's just, again, a reminder of the deep complexities in analysing property, building, constructing a portfolio and understanding your own cash and tax implications. So in South Australia, you're paying $27,000 on a $2 million land value, and then at $3 million, it almost doubles up to $51,000 a year in tax. Whereas Victoria remains the cheapest at $2 million and $3 million. So they're at 12,000 and then 25,000. WA at $2 million is about $15,000 in land tax. And the others are sort of somewhere in between. So there's sort of a high level, and I know there's a lot of numbers there, but we're just painting a picture around where I guess the vast majority of the population is likely to end up landing when it comes to the land value of they own in any given state or territory. And again, Northern Territory is zero. So I've come up with a few scenarios, but I've probably said enough there, and we can come back to those scenarios. But what are some of the observations that you have?
The rate of land tax and the state's overall capital growth performance over the last 12 months are inversely proportional.
So you think it's that clear?
No, I just spotted that trend, but it could change, you know, as quick as anything. But the point is Tasmania's had phenomenal growth. Northern Territory until now has underperformed. And we look at Melbourne and Sydney, you know, they're certainly not peaking for land tax threats there. Yeah. And I think that it's just amusing. Land tax is not meant to be designed to put investors off or to encourage people. It's a state-based decision that is formulated when they're looking at their budget, but it is amusing.
Well, so, Kate, earlier on I stole your thunder by mentioning one thing that was unfair about land tax.
Yeah.
What's yours?
I've got two, actually. Okay. And the first one is an interesting one, but in Victoria, and I'd need to reference whether this is taking place in other states as well, but in Victoria, if a first home buyer or an owner occupier purchases a property that is owned by an investor and has land tax obligations attached to it, they will pay the residual of the land tax bill for that entire year, because that's how our legislation is worded. So even though land tax isn't meant to affect anyone who owns their property and lives in it, so owner occupier property, when you purchase off an investor who's paying land tax, you'll inherit the balance of their land tax bill for that year. And the quirky thing about it is land tax, unlike other taxes, is not calculated in the financial year. It's calculated in the calendar year. So right now, if you settled a property today, you wouldn't have zero land tax left to pay for the tax year. You'd actually have 6 months' worth of land tax to pay. So yeah, that's a quirk and an unfair thing. Now, the other unfair thing, and I know that it's not just restricted to Victoria. In fact, it's effective in Tasmania, also in Queensland, and I think a couple of other states as well. We have what's called an absentee owner land tax rate, and that means that anyone who owns property that's being currently calculated for land tax, if they live outside of Australia, so we're talking about expats, or travellers, they will have what's called an absentee surcharge. So they'll pay the nominal land tax anyway, but they'll also have a huge portion of land tax to pay. And I think it's completely disproportionate with what we understand land tax to be now. It's a whopping 2% of the property's value each year. So if your property is worth $2 million and you're overseas, you'll cop a really nasty land tax bill.
Jeez. I'm pretty sure we don't have that in South Australia.
No, but
like you say, land tax is a state-based tax and they all have their little quirks and anomalies.
Yeah.
So, Kate, how does land tax vary based on personal versus if you own it personally or if you own it in a company or if you own it in a trust?
So in various states it's different across the board, but land tax thresholds start at a lower level if the property is owned by a trust or a company for a lot of our states, including Victoria. So you've got to be really clear about calculating whether you're eligible to pay the land tax or not based on the value. A lot of investors who have the property in their own personal name will have a higher level that it kicks into gear at, whereas it's much lower if you're a company or a trust.
Right.
So one thing that's pretty clear, which you've sort of touched on in differing ways, is the state governments and territories are more and more turning it into a progressive tax, like the income taxation system, whereby the more property you own, the more they're going to tax you at a higher rate. And so they're seeing it as a way to penalise people owning too much property in their own name. And so obviously that's something each of you are pretty anti. And again, it's why if you're accumulating particularly
significant residential property portfolio, spreading it across different states and territories can make a significant difference to your cash flow at the end of the day.
All right, very
Absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely, yep.
Kate, you've talked about how absentee owners are treated. You talked about different ownership structures. How are land values calculated? So we talk about market value, and now we're talking about value for rating and taxing purposes. Mm. How is it calculated?
A lot of people wonder how this is actually calculated, and it could be as detailed as curbside, which involves someone driving past. Typically, though, it's an algorithm, and it might be based on a certain land value per square metre just being apportioned to a particular suburb. And that can make for, you know, a lot of variation. As we know, we chatted about valuing like a professional valuer last week, and we appreciate just how many things need to be taken into account when you're formulating value. So as we know, for anyone's valuation to come back on a council rates notice or a land tax bill being outside of their expectations or in excess of their expectations, Dave touched on this before, it can create a lot of upset, and you've really got to strike very quickly to have it reassessed, and you don't always get guaranteed a win there, but a lot of money is at stake. How is it assessed? It would not be a detailed valuation, in my opinion, Pete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would encourage people to listen to previous podcasts on valuation, not just last week, but a few weeks ago I talked about valuing for mortgage purposes, market value, valuing for insurance purposes, and valuing for rating and taxing purposes. We don't have time to do that today because we are running out of time, but I think it's very important that you listen to that so that you clearly understand, more often than not, the value that the government gives for your land is not what the market would pay for your land. Often the market would pay for more. One of the reasons is, for many states and territories, land tax is calculated as of the 1st of January. So if the market's moving really quickly like it is this year, you know, the market value is going to be much higher on the 1st of June than it was on the 1st of January, but you'd still be paying based on what it was worth back in on the 1st of January.
So where that's going to hurt is in a market falling.
Mm-hmm.
So if the market's falling, then you're more likely to want to look at the land assessment, tax assessment, because you're more likely to be eligible for a reduction. But when it's growing, as Pete just said, you're more likely to be on the winning ledger.
So Dave and Anne-Marie have put together some very comprehensive notes, which I would strongly encourage everyone to have a look at. Because we've only got about another 5 minutes to go, Kate and Dave, is there anything else that's really important that you would like to point out to our listeners about land tax?
Yeah, I would. I think letting tax determine where you invest is not a well thought out strategy. Your strategy has to take tax into account, but should not be hinging on tax benefit. But clearly land tax can be a biggie depending on which state you're in and what your exposure is to that state. So you absolutely need to know what your cash flows look like, because if they're tight, this could really tank you.
Yeah, for sure. Dave?
If you're, again, looking to amass a reasonable size property portfolio, mix whether it's residential or commercial, and we're looking at sort of, you know, the multi-millions, 1, 2, 3 million plus of land value, it's incumbent upon you to start factoring in land tax to your decision making, because it can make a big difference to your end net income position. So put together a few example scenarios this morning, but I might just jump to just the high level. So if your unimproved land value is $1 million, so let's say, you know, you've got total property worth $1.5 million. So that's a 66% land-to-asset ratio. If your yield is sort of 3 to 4%, which is where most, you know, roundabouts, most cities and regional areas will average out to, your land tax is going to be $3,000 to $5,000 in most states, or around 5 to 10% of the income received. Whereas in ACT and Tasmania, it'll be 15% up to 25%. So that's one in every $6 to $4 is being paid out in tax. When you move up to $2 million of unimproved land value, we're using the same numbers, 66% land to asset ratio, 3 to 4% yield. Victoria is one in $10 is payable on land tax at the lowest end. WA is $1 in every $6 to $8. The rest of the states are significantly higher. So you're talking sort of 15 to 30% with South Australia and Tassie paying the most. So you're paying up to $1 in every $3.33 out in land tax to your rent. And that's not even factoring in interest costs, other holding costs. So, like, it's a big number.
That's a huge number. I didn't realise that, and I live here. That is a huge... So you're talking about almost one-third of your income goes towards land tax.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, look, just making that point, you know, if you're planning to accumulate, and obviously diversification then also allows you to manage property cycle risk as well. We're in a very unusual situation at the moment where the whole country is increasing at the same time. That's pretty rare. Now, that's a 1 in every 10-15 years occurrence. So, yeah, as you can tell, you know, none of us are 100% across land tax, you know, across every state, territory, all the nuances. It's so complex. And that's why, you know, I think, you know, we believe it's worthwhile having, we've spent a whole episode on it. And, you know, really we've just covered a lot of the high level. But when you're narrowing down on your own personal situation, you know, and factoring it into your current portfolio and your next decision, then, you know, it's simpler to at least understand the implications of your property decisions on an individual basis. So that's why we thought we'd dedicate an episode to it.
Excellent. And so I agree with you, Dave, that you need to speak to a property professional because it's not just all about land tax. So here is my bomb. You ready for this? Because even though I'm a bloke, I can do two things at once. So while you two were talking, I went onto the ABS website and just did some quick stats and looked at property values over the last 10 years. All right? So Northern Territory, zero land tax. So if land tax was your priority, you wanted to save land tax, you would buy all your properties in the Northern Territory. Let's say Darwin. All right? Well, you know how much property values have risen in Darwin in the last 10 years?
Zero.
They've actually dropped backwards. They're actually worth... Properties are worth less today than they were 10 years ago
by
6%. But let's call that zero. All right, let's just say they stayed the same. Western Australia, which also has a relatively low land tax environment, they've gone up 2% in 10 years. So let's just look at, say, Darwin. So you could pay no land tax for 10 years in Darwin and your million-dollar portfolio was still worth $1 million. But if you went to Sydney... your million-dollar portfolio is now worth $1.78 million, even though you had to pay $40,000 in land tax over that 10-year period. Your million-dollar portfolio is worth $1.53 million in Melbourne, even though you had to pay $40,000 in land tax. So you get the picture here. It's not just about land tax. Yes, we think it's very important because we've spent a whole episode on it, but you need to speak to a property professional, work out what your goals are. If there is no way in the world you're going to get to $3 million worth of land value in property investment, you don't have to worry about those numbers. If you're just looking after for one to two properties, speak to your property professional, speak to a great buyer's agent and work out what you should buy and where you should buy. How is that for a bomb, eh? All right, please don't go away. We've got our gold nuggets from our lovely Kate and Dave coming up.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
So, Kate, what's your gold nugget?
My gold nugget is all about being aware of cash flow. We often hear sad stories about investors who are either cash flow rich and asset poor or asset rich and cash flow poor. Now, the fastest way to be asset rich and cash flow poor is to have properties with outgoings that you can't manage. So you're unfortunately forced to sell the property if you're facing bills and demand notices. It's not a nice position to be in. Now, there are lots of reasons why a property could have an out of control negative cash flow, but land tax could be a contributor if you're not in a position to be able to deal with it. So it pays to be aware before you sign on the dotted line.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that, Kate. Dave, your gold nugget?
Yeah, so my gold nugget, just adding to Pete's bomb he shared at the end. You know, just as Pete's saying, I mean, we've dedicated one out of 108 episodes to land tax and we've barely scratched the surface. And, you know, it is a factor to consider into your portfolio plan, but you know, it's just a piece of the puzzle. You shouldn't be making your property decisions absolutely not solely on land tax, but you want to understand the impact of it in conjunction with the various other considerations that'll help you determine the right property strategy for your next purchase in the context of your long-term property plan.
That's excellent, Dave, you're right. Land tax is just one piece of the property puzzle. Very good, very good. All right, thank you once again, Kate and Dave, for another fantastic podcast. Very informative and very appropriate, being end of financial year, because you'll have to, don't forget to factor in land tax when you are doing your tax return. So, and we look forward to you joining us again next week. So bye for now.
See you next week, guys.
If you've enjoyed the episode and would like to learn more about optimizing your tax deductions, listen to episodes 87, Optimizing Tax Deductions, Top Mortgage and Loan Strategy Tips, and episode 55, All Things Property and Tax, How to Understand Your Deductions at Tax Time. Episode 34, No Mortgage Strategy, number 4 of the top 7 critical mistakes. And also episode 9, Why Your Mortgage Strategy is More Important Than Your Interest Rate.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bakos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, Chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.